delighted to be speaking today to Harry Curley, who plays Pete Quaife in Sunny Afternoon, which is touring the country at the moment. How are you, Harry or Pete?
Hi, Dave. It's Harry here for now. Yeah, I'm really good, thank you. Really good. Really excited to be getting to Stoke and carrying on the rest of the tour.
Yeah, it should be good. It's really a good play, a good musical, I know, because I missed it last time round and so glad they decided to reinvent it, bring it round again.
Yeah, absolutely. And it really is a play. You mentioned it being a play there. It's, I guess it could be a musical because technically it's got the music, it's got the dancing. But I think something about our story is that it's very emotional at its core, and it's not your sort of jazz hands kind of show. It's very emotional, very raw. And I'm so happy they've brought it back because, of course, when it went out on tour last time, I think I must have been, what, about 16. So I was in North London myself, still in school, waiting at the chance to get out of there.
Yeah, yeah. So we know that the Kinks started up as the Ravens back in 1963. Is that when your story starts?
Yeah, that's exactly when it starts. So the show opens on one of these Ravens gigs, and they'd work with Robert Wace, who eventually became one of their managers, and he was the lead singer for the Ravens. And they're a bit square, bit of a square group, bit of a square 50s sort of sound, I guess, sort of pre-war sound. I think they were going for some ballads, etc. And but then our story breaks through with one of the Kinks songs, and it's incredibly high-paced energy. It sort of shows how the Ravens become the Kinks, who eventually become one of the biggest bands in the UK, and then they conquer the world chart, really.
Yeah, they did. And of course, your character Pete Quaife was one of the original ones, wasn't he? He was one of the original three alongside the two Davis brothers. He had a sort of strange relationship with them in a way, didn't he? Because he tried to leave, and before he did leave, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right. So they met originally in school, the William Grimshaw School in Muswell Hill, and he was classroom friends with them, with Ray particularly, the same age. But yeah, Pete had he struggled a lot in it. I won't spoil it, but of course, if you know the Kinks, it being an autobiographical story from Ray's point of view, he does leave, but he ends up leaving twice in real life, I think, because I think the first time he had a motorcycle accident, and he was thinking, had some time off from the group, and he was thinking, you know what, this isn't too bad away from all of the fighting. And then he comes back, and he's a bit of an ambassador for the band. He's got a very hard role within the sort of band's chemistry, sort of reminding them where they came from a lot in this story. And he really longs for that, and he longs to make music with his friends, because at the end of the day, they are a group of four lads from North London making music from a very young age. And I can't even imagine what that does to you when you're sort of going on American tours and whatnot. And yeah, you sort of can't lose sight of how you started.
Absolutely. Now, and what people think of the Kinks, think Ray Davis. That's the vision. But actually, Pete Quaife was actually the spokesperson for the band, wasn't he, for much of the early times?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that that we explore in the show, in the sort of earlier parts of the show, as you can imagine. My girlfriend likes to remind me that the reason that they chose Pete is because he was the good-looking one. So although we're on the radio now, you're going to have to imagine that at home, whatever that
means. Yeah, I was going to ask that question, because I know he was always thought of as the good-looking one of the Kinks, but I was going to ask, what do you think? But there we are, we'll leave it at that. Eh? Yeah, but he was the spokesperson anyway, wasn't he? He always he fronted the band whenever they needed questions asking from the press or whatever, didn't he?
Yeah, that's right. He sort of the company lines, he saw it as a real vision what they were doing. And I think because he was an artist, he was a graphic artist, he eventually went on to sort of carry on that in the later parts of his life. I think his, not that the other lads certainly weren't creative, of course they were, that those were composing some brilliant songs, but I think the way he could put his words together, he's certainly doing a better job than me. I'm certainly Harry right now, not Pete, but that vision, that sincerity that the music needed and sort of the press needed, I think.
Yeah, and we also only see, as an audience, we've only seen in the past, listened to the records, seen them on Top of the Pops, all happy and singing together and everything. And you don't realise in many of these bands that there is tension behind the scenes.
Oh my God, such tension. I mean, of course, you've got the two brothers, Ray and Dave, who are sort of early Gallagher brothers, and certainly a lot worse. And the tensions certainly do boil over, and they did boil over. And that's something we see in the show. The infamous Cardiff gig, if you know about that, when Mick and Dave got into another fight, and Mick ended up smashing one of the cymbal stands on Dave's head and thought he killed him, and he did a runner. That's something that happened in the show very briefly. Actually, not briefly, it's a big moment, but of course, it's a real tough time for those lads. And I think that's something that the show really beautifully explores, actually, because the journey that they went on, sort of personally, together, creatively, emotionally, it all boils over. But at the heart, they still are brothers, and they still are friends with them, Mick and Pete. And that's where that comes from, a sort of brotherly kind of love, I guess.
Yeah, I suppose so. Now, you started in 1963 with your the showing. That's where it starts. Where does it finish? Where does your show? What's the stage where you actually finish? What year is it?
So it's, oh God, here's my knowledge now. But it's when Waterloo Sunset gets composed. I think it's at 68 or 69. Oh God, look at me, right. Awful. And there's a really beautiful moment at the end of the play. It's 1967. That I won't sort of ruin, because it's really beautiful. Where the sort of band come together after all the odds and the crazy 4 or 5 years that they've just experienced together, and they make something beautiful. And there's a really bittersweet moment about that. It's lovely. It's my favourite part of the night.
Yeah, don't give any more away about what's going to happen. We don't want to know anything until we actually.
Of course.
and we want to have that, but. If you're not, a real aficionado of the Kinks, you know, you enjoy the music and so on, are you going to learn a lot more about them by coming to your play?
You absolutely are, because everybody knows the Beatles story. Everybody knows the Stones story. And it's a real surprise that not many know the Kinks story, and they absolutely should. The show sort of works. It's sort of like a biopic, I guess you could say. It's a play with music. It's a concert at the same time. So if you're coming for the music and you're a Kinks aficionado, as you say, yourself, you're going to absolutely love that. And sort of the story was written with Ray Davies himself. This is Ray's baby.
Yeah.
Ray and Joe Pennell are a fantastic writer. So everything in the play has absolutely happened. It's all from Ray's point of view, admittedly. It all follows sort of, because it has to channel through someone, and it channels through Ray. And you're going to learn loads about the music, about the tensions, about sort of the quieter characters in the band, Pete and Mick and families and everything. It really does that in a really sort of, not an educational way. It's perfect. It's very heartfelt. And I'm very proud to be in it and sort of taking some people back in time to memory lane, or sort of welcoming new fans of the Kinks.
Yeah. Absolutely. We want new fans brought in as well, don't we? Now, on the tour, I think you're cast, and there aren't the two members of the cast, two members of the Kinks, experienced members, experienced Sunday afternoon people. Is that right?
They are, absolutely. Yes. A few more than two, actually, but the two lads playing, Ray and Dave, Danny Horn and Oliver Hoare, they first started with the show in the West End, probably about 2016, I think they started. And they've taken the show over to Chicago last year, and now they're back with us. And there's something really lovely about that for me and Zach, particularly, who play the other Kinks, Pete and Mick. Sort of, they have that brotherly bond already when they came in from rehearsals, and they came in, and sort of it was lovely to be put into that mix and to sort of work with those guys in that way. I actually saw the show in about 2016, so I probably did see the boys, maybe. So that's quite a surreal moment to now be watching them as a young lad in London, and then be wherever we may be, whether it's Stoke or Inverness, wherever it is, with the lads on stage.
Absolutely. It must be so so good, so satisfying. So let's talk a little bit about Harry, not Pete this time, but about Harry.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Young actor, you're what, 25, 26, qualified in 2022. How have you adapted to being a professional actor?
Yeah, I was, so I'm about 25, and I went to Rose Bruford College. I did the actor musicianship course there, and it's a fantastic course. It's a fantastic course. There's actor musos all over the industry, all over the world, from that course, and I feel very lucky to have gone there. I think we were prepared really well Because there's something at Rose Bruford where you work with all the different courses, all the different technical courses, and you have a real understanding of what they do. So I think that's, as well as the brilliant technical training, etc., I think that's one of the biggest things I took away from the school, sort of working with others in different departments and sort of understanding what they do. Not only is that practically really helpful, because you sort of know where you're standing at all points with everybody, but I think it's just so important to sort of see how huge your team is. I mean, Sunday Afternoon, for example, tours with, I think about just shy of 50 people are on the road. Currently I'm on my day off, but they're currently building the set in Torquay right now. And there's loads of us, and every single person has such a specific, unique job. And so it's a lot more than the 15 or so of us that you see on stage every night in the cast.
Yeah. And of course, is it such a shock, a bit like sort of when you pass your driving test and the first time you're on your own, and you've come out of stage school and you have your first job. It's suddenly reality hits, I suppose, does it?
Yeah, absolutely. It's something you dream about for years. I think the driving analogy is super apt. You dream about it for years and you get there and it does become your job. For the last 9 months, I've been touring the UK, which has been fantastic. It's a great job. You go all up and down the country, meet loads of fantastic people. But at the end of the day, at the end of the show, you finish the show and you're in your digs and you're like, here I am. Here I am. This is what it means to I'm where I am now. And that was a dream years ago. And it's important to remind yourself of that.
Yeah. And I believe you love touring, don't you?
Yeah, I really love touring. One of my favorite things about touring is because there's 50 or so of us on the road. And of course, you can have people from all over the country in that company. Is when we go to a particular place, somebody's coming up to their home venue, like one of the girls, it's her first theatre gig, a girl called Jada. She's fantastic. And we went to Sunderland. And I was really looking forward to just how happy she was every night. It was infectious. That's one of my favourite parts. But yeah, I love touring. I did a Oh What a Lovely War tour. That was my first tour. That was really fantastic. That was with a much smaller company of about six, where we'd build the set, put it in the back of the van at the end of the week, which I think is a fantastic way to start. And that was a brilliant job. And sort of going back to some of those theatres now, that's a really nice moment for me as well.
Yeah, but you miss your family, I presume, don't you? And you mentioned a girlfriend, I think, there that was questioning whether the good looks was right or wrong. But anyway, but you must have to miss them most of the time you're away.
Yeah, of course, it's tough. I mean, I think we're going to about 26 venues, and a lot of those times you can't really come home in between. But I know it sounds cliche and a bit... I don't know, saccharine, but the company do become a sort of second family, sort of, I guess, out of necessity a little bit, because, you know, I mean, you all need each other when you're out there creatively, but also because, like I said earlier, it's just you get back to things at the end of the night, and it's just you. And that's lovely. You can't pop downstairs and see the dog or ask someone to pop the kettle on for you, can you really?
No.
It's a very lucky job, and I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Yeah, you miss your dog too.
Oh yeah, gotta miss the dog, lovely Doogle. Although we are in Richmond soon, so I'll see him then. I can wait a few weeks.
Oh, that'll be good. Yeah, we've got a Labra poodle, Cavapoodle, sorry, what have we got?
Oh yeah.
Cavapoo, yeah. Labrapoo. Well, we've got one of those anyway. One of those.
One of them.
One of them, yeah. Mad as a box of frogs, really. But
of course.
All right. So we're coming to the end of our time together. Give us one last plug for the show then.
Okay, Sunday Afternoon is at the Regent Theatre from, I believe, the 7th of April, Tuesday the 7th of April, until Saturday, April 11th. It tells the story of the Kinks. It's heartfelt, it's funny, it's emotional. Come down to your local theatre, take a step back in a time machine and relive some fantastic musical memories, or come and join the Kinks Club, as I did all those years ago, when I saw the show for the first time. And now I can't stop talking about the Kinks. I am a Kink. Maybe you'll be a Kink.
You are definitely a Kink in my mind. And thanks ever so much for a fantastic chat. Thanks ever so much, Harry. Look forward to seeing you on stage.
Cheers, Dave. See you very soon.